this is the work we have right now. If we don't fill it, no one's going to be there. And it's different from like long-term worker. You're like, oh, we'll get someone in there when we get them in there. It's not like that. Hey, if there's a festival, we have these dates to get somebody there, and that's that. There's no not meeting your deadline.
Hey, I'm Devin Michael, and this is Hire Quality, the show where I sit down with the movers and shakers of talent acquisition to hear their talent triumphs, their hiring horror stories, and genuine opinions about the recruiting industry.
All right, so on this episode, I got to talk with Brittany Etheridge, who is the Director of Talent Acquisition North America for Acosta. You probably don't know who Acosta is unless you're in the world that they live in, but you've probably interacted with quite a few of their employees, whether it be in, you know, let's go with Best Buy or even a Walmart, maybe. Very, very unique and very high volume. And I think if you live in a world that's high volume and you want to keep your recruiters motivated and getting after it, this is the episode for you. Brittany dives into her strategies as to how she keeps her team super motivated to stay with her, to grow with her, and to hit goals with her. So if that's something that you want to do with your team and you have high volume and what could be an exhausting job, this is the episode for you. Let's jump in. All right, Brittany, thanks so much for hopping on the podcast today. I'm super excited to jump in because you are part of the space that I live in. I breathe in this high volume, crazy recruiting space. And I don't get to talk to fellow pain feelers too often. So for the world that doesn't know Brittany, I know you to be the Director of Talent Acquisition in North America for the Acosta Group, but people might not know who that is. You've even educated me on what you guys do better than I could have researched. So why don't you tell the world who you are, what you do, who Acosta is as well?
Yeah, so I'm Brittany. I am the Director of Talent Acquisition, specifically for the Flex team. So my team does a lot of project gig staffing, but it's for Acosta Group. So Acosta owns a variety of companies. They own Premium, Mosaic, Own Acosta. There's quite a few out there that fall under that umbrella. So we service all of the companies they own, and we staff anything and everything from, you know, something that might take you an hour in store to multiple weeks. Anything from the people you see sampling at Costco to those girls that you see in the VIP tents with Bacardi or Bud Light. So kind of anything and everything in between, you might see our stamp on it.
I'm notorious for getting in the weeds too quickly, but you say like gig, what would qualify in your guys' world as gig? Because I think of like, you know, Uber and Lyft. So I'm thinking that kind of gig. But like, what would that be for you guys?
So it can vary, right? Some people think truly like an Uber or a Lyft or something, you know, like that. But it's really anything that's short term. So it could be something that you're picking up to work for a single day. It could be something where you're picking up, you know, the weekends for the holiday season. It really kind of varies. But we have varying scales of length, I guess you would say, but it's really just short-term work that you kind of have a little bit of flexibility with sometimes.
Gotcha. And then what's like the makeup of this team, of the Flex team? What does that look like? Just as setting the lay of the land for people.
Yeah. So there's me. I have a couple managers that sit under me, and they oversee recruiters and talent ops partners. So that would be, you know, the people who are in the weeds, sourcing candidates, finding them in high volume. And then the talent ops partners are going to be more of your people who are managing those reps. They're the point of contact. So if they're on site and they have a question or something that they're wondering, the store isn't sure that they were coming or whatever the case is, they're going to be the ones that are managing those people and really providing them that hands-on experience.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm assuming, or I know this to be fact, you didn't start in high volume recruiting. I don't know if anyone does.
I do. No.
Maybe they do.
But it looks like you started in fitness. Is that correct?
I did. So I took a job at a gym and I was like, oh, this will give me a free gym membership and I can work around my class schedule. And I was that person that was at the gym at 4 a.m. on the weekends so that people could get in. Actually really liked it. Saw some opportunities to kind of move up. Was in membership sales and then I was in operations. And kind of just fell in love with the environment. I don't know. So I went through club manager training at the time. I don't know if they call them club managers or general managers or what now, but I went through that. And then I eventually started running my own locations for 24 Hour Fitness. So that's kind of where I went through fitness and then eventually made my way out to California, lived out there for a little bit, ran a club out there, and then, you know, moved back to Arizona.
So how did recruiting happen? Like, where did that leap.
When I moved back to Arizona, I took a job at a tech company. I was like, I'll just try something different. And I was there for maybe 6 months. And I had a friend who worked at a staffing company at the time. And she was like, hey, we're looking for somebody with a little bit more management experience. Come on over. Like, I can teach you how to recruit. And I was like, it can't be that hard. I had to hire all my own staff when I worked at the gym. Like, everybody from, you know, the membership to the front desk to the kids club, I had to hire all those people. So I'm like, it can't be that hard. Her staffing company wasn't even there for 90 days. They pulled us in and let us know that they were filing bankruptcy. And that was our last day. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was.
Wow.
We actually call it doomsday. I still work with some people on my team now who were part of that. But we got a call from one of the vice presidents over at Mosaic. That's who we were doing staffing projects for. And he said, we really need help. You guys were supposed to staff for us this weekend. And now we're being told you're not. But so we said, yeah, of course we'll help. And we had no idea what we were doing. We had no idea like if we were going to get paid or if people were even going to listen to us. We were on my Gmail and our personal phones reaching out to reps. And we ended up getting like 80% of our stuff staffed for that weekend between Friday night to Saturday. So after that, it just sort of, we were like, I think we can do this. Like, could we create this at Mosaic? We did. We just decided to create like an internal staffing agency. And we very much so operate just like a 3PL. We're just internal. So we get to remove a lot of that red tape.
Did that literally not exist at Mosaic before you did it?
No, it didn't. So we, Mosaic had an internal TA team, but they specialized more in like the long-term roles. And they were using this staffing agency to do a lot of their like gig or project staffing because they're set up to operate quicker and move faster. So no, it didn't exist until we decided to just try and pilot it and bring it internal.
I don't want you to feel like I'm just giving you the only credit, but you are part of the team that pioneered the thing you're doing right now.
Yeah. So there were four or five of us that came over from the company we were at. And we just said, yeah, we don't know if they'll keep us, if this will be a long-term thing, if this will be a couple months thing, like if it fails, right, we might not be here. So there's three of us left. But yeah, we started with like four or five of us.
Wow. That's legit.
It sounds so cool, like looking back on it. And when I think about it, I'm like, man, I was a stressful person to be married to. Like I lost multiple jobs in just a brief period of time. And I was like, just trust me. It's great.
Right. I mean, it's kind of entrepreneurial. It sounds like an entrepreneurial story in a way. Yeah. Like you created this thing, right? So I'm assuming it went well and Mosaic kept with the model. And started to, is it basically like once it was created, then they started to market that?
Yeah. So there were not a lot of people who were willing to sign off on it at first. Nobody really wanted to touch it in case it went poorly. So the leader that I worked with at the time, we just sort of went all in. We kind of just started doing road shows. We would travel to our different offices and we would be like, I know you're using external staffing, but use us. And we would do whatever we had to kind of win the business, even though we were internal. We did that for a little less than a year. And it really caught the attention. We started growing. We were doing a lot of work. So that's when Acosta said, this is no longer Mosaics because they own Mosaic, right? So they said, you're coming over here. And we got moved over under Acosta so that we could start servicing all of their companies versus just Mosaic, which is what we were doing at the time.
And I'm assuming is like Acosta really focused on like, I don't know, with your team, is it like big retail? I don't know if you're allowed to share or not, but like what would be like some of the big deals of a client type, if that makes sense. Like, what would you guys be like? This is Gold Star.
So I think it just depends on the company. A constant group owns multiple companies and they all kind of specialize in different things. So when you see more of like the flashy stuff, you know, like those VIP tents or whatnot, the cool street teams that you see out like passing stuff out for your clients, that's going to probably be more like a Mosaic thing. But when you see like the assisted sales, like the people in store, when you go to Best Buy, a lot of those people that are helping you with like Samsung products or whatnot, they don't actually work for Best Buy. A lot of those guys, that's more of like some Mosaic, but also premium. And then you have Acosta, who is, I think they were actually the first company to sell shelf space. They're big on keeping brands in store, stocked, helping with the merchandising part and really making sure that brands are represented well in stores. Because it's one thing to have your product in store, but it's another thing to have your product in a great spot in the store.
If I was wanting to do a cool Super Bowl activation, like Acosta would be making some like field goal post out of cans of soup or something like
you
that.
You definitely go to Mosaic. Yes.
Okay, that's Mosaic.
That's Mosaic. Okay. And we have done some cool stuff like that. We've activated at the Super Bowl. We have something for Fan Fest coming up for the WNBA. I got to work Ape Fest a few years ago, which for Bored Ape, the NFT, we've gotten to do some really cool stuff. We even built this, well, we were part of an activation where we like shut down part of the park in Chicago, Millennium Park, and there was a giant gumball machine. And we did this huge activation for Google where they were giving away like basketball tickets and jerseys and all this really cool stuff.
That's legit. Have you ever hired yourself into an activation?
No, I've not. But I have gone to work some of the cool ones. So I've never hired myself into them, mostly because I have to be available to like take calls or help if something doesn't go right. But I have been on site for them. When I've been on site, I might as well have hired myself because maybe I would have gotten paid a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. So I know me and you have talked about like kind of your, I think about it like a superpower. That's probably giving the term a lot of weight, but we'll go with that, right? And yours, you stated, was motivating and retaining recruiters in a world where today recruiters are constantly burnt out, especially in high volume. Before we jump into how you're doing that, I want to share, because I don't think people understand what high volume can look like. Like, it's different for everyone. And I imagine yours is probably pretty insane. So, like, what does it look like in your recruiter's world? Like, what's the kind of chaos that they might feel that you're helping them to, like, mitigate the feelings around?
So, the best example I can give as to, like, what high volume can really look like is last year, going into, I want to say, like, mid-October, we got a call from one of our client teams that was handling Samsung. And they said, hey, we have this really crazy ask. Let us know if it's not going to work. They wanted 400 reps, like 400 separate people, to go into 400 separate locations in Best Buy over the holiday season and promote Samsung products. And they were giving us about 2.5 weeks notice. So that's kind of the high volume, right? During the holidays, it's a lot of asks like that, where my recruiters are hiring anywhere upwards of 10 plus people a day. Those are just people they're hiring. That doesn't include the people that they get on the phone with that don't fit the bill or whatnot. But yeah, I mean, there's parts of the year where we're hiring upwards of over 10 people a day for various projects. And that's just one project. We're usually doing that while staffing, you know, multiple projects.
Right. Do they even have a rec load? Like, is there,
no.
Do you guys have, yeah, I was gonna say, it's probably not a thing.
No, this is the work we have right now. If we don't fill it, no one's gonna be there. And it's different from like long-term worker, like, oh, we'll get someone in there when we get them in there. It's not like that. Hey, if there's a festival, we have these dates to get somebody there, and that's that. There's no not meeting your deadline.
At any given point, like how many people a month will one recruiter be hiring?
It just depends. We look at it a lot of shifts, because sometimes you can fill multiple shifts with one person, especially if you have projects that are near each other, right? Like you might be able to get somebody to do this project this day and a different project another day. So that's where like us making sure the candidates and our reps also have a good experience is important so that we can get them to work multiple. But I have recruiters that are probably staffing anywhere from 250 to 400, 450 shifts per month. So that could vary in terms of number of reps. We're hiring a lot of people. It's a lot.
I was trying to do math out loud. That's a bad idea. Yeah, it's a lot of people. And I can't imagine not being burnt out. So just tell me how you're leading. It sounds like things are working well and you're building something spectacular. So like, what are you doing right?
So I think the first thing is setting a precedent from the minute someone's hired onto your team, right? If you wait until it's down the road, they're 6 months in to really like introduce yourself or check in on them, which I think we see a lot in recruiting. People are like, oh, we've had this recruiter. I didn't even realize it. I think it's too late then. So whenever we bring somebody onto our team, which is not very often because we're not really losing people very often, I sit down with them. So they sit down with a couple people on our team, obviously their manager, they sit down, you know, with peers and stuff, but I sit down with every single person and we just kind of go through like a 30-minute, I get to know them. I go through some of my non-negotiables and then we really just level set. And I think having that conversation, one, makes it very clear that the hierarchy in our team is really not that important. They're just titles and labels. But also, I think it opens it up so that people feel more comfortable talking about things before it gets to that point where they're just completely done or burned out.
Oh, true.
But I think it's some of my non-negotiables that kind of make the difference.
What are those?
So my first one is you have to use your PTO. And I know that that sounds kind of crazy, but we've been a use it or lose it company since I've been with the company. So whether you use your PTO or not, at the end of the year, it's resetting, which is different. I think a lot of people normally accrue it. So that was my big one, is like people have to use their PTO. And I try to set the example. So I've worked places where your boss is like, yeah, you can take PTO, but you never see them take it, right? And the whole time you're on PTO, they're like texting you or bothering you or whatnot. So I try to set the example where I take it. I want people to see that I mean it when I say it. And then when they're gone, we don't talk to them. And that goes as far as to say I had somebody log on to a Zoom when they were on PTO and I booted them from the Zoom. And they texted me and they said, why did you do that? And I said, you're on PTO. Go. What are you doing? And in the moment, I think they were a little annoyed. But then like afterwards, they're like, I'm really glad you did that. But like, you have to demonstrate that it's important. So I think that's my first one, is I tell everybody you have to use your PTO. And then we do check-ins throughout the year. Like, hey, you're on track to use it. Hey, it's this month. You haven't used any. Like, I want to see some schedule, like whatever the case is. And then the other one is that communication goes both ways. Too often, I think we see communication going one direction, right? But people forget that managers are people too. We're not perfect, although some of us like think we are, but we're not perfect. We have bad days. We have days where we're explaining something to our team and it makes sense to us and it doesn't make sense to anyone else, right? So communication goes both ways, and I will always be straightforward and direct with my communication to my team as long as I know that I can expect the same thing from them, because I can't be the kind of manager they need if I don't know what that is or I don't have any feedback either. Those are my two big ones.
Gotcha. Well, it sounds like they stay because it's a great work culture. And on top of that, do you feel like they stay because they're performing? Like, is everyone like kind of getting close to their goals that they have, or is it strictly off of like how they feel about working there?
I would say the biggest reason is how they feel about working there. We're also just really respectful of the fact that we're all remote. So at the end of the day, like if it takes you 3 hours, but it takes someone else 10 hours to get done, like I'm cool with that. I'm looking at your output. I don't need to micromanage your day. Like there's a level of respect and trust there. I would say there are times of the year, 100%, where we might not hit a goal, but I don't think that we focus so much on like, hey, this person didn't hit their goal. It's more like, hey, what could we have done better to help you hit your goal? Could I have removed an obstacle more? Could I have checked in on you earlier to maybe help you find new routes for sourcing? That's kind of more of our mentality, is what could we have done differently to help people hit their goals? And just, you know, making sure everybody knows that at the end of the day, we're chasing progress and we're not chasing perfection. No one is going to be perfect. Sometimes you can hit all your goals, you can fill every shift, and then you might have somebody just act crazy on site and it feels like you failed. Bad. Yeah. So even though you filled everything, like you feel like you look bad. So as long as we're progressing, like that's the end goal in my mind.
So shifting like a little more tactical, I still feel like in order for a high volume recruiter to not get totally burnt out doing the work itself, they kind of have to be set up well, right? They have to be equipped. They have to be motivated and they have to be encouraged, right? But part of it is being equipped. So how do you go about like equipping your team with the skills or the enablement? Like, what does that look like for your guys' world of like, I'd say this is the top tier of high volume, like where you're like, it's moments notice. It's in a lot of people. Yeah. Like, how do you equip people to do that job well?
Well, that's a tough one. So I'd say the first thing we do is we make sure that they feel like they have all the tools. So when people come onto the team, we make sure that they are set up with all of the sites they need. That's like the first most important thing, because a lot of the recruiters we hire, they haven't done high volume recruiting. So they're not going to know, oh, you need to go to this site. Oh, you need to try this site. So it's making sure that they have logins. They have a plethora of bookmarks, right, on their desktop so that they know where they're going. Like when I get a new role, I can see the location and say, oh, this is going to be tough. Like, let me go get it in all of these places. So I think that's the first thing, is not assuming that they know everything and really making sure that we do our due diligence to teach them. And then I would say the second thing is giving them some autonomy with their schedule. I noticed a few years ago, we did this right before COVID. So then it was kind of like ironic, because then it didn't seem like people needed it as much, but we decided to do summer Fridays years ago. And we were like, okay, so instead of working 4/8 or 5/8, you can work like 4/9 and then a 4-hour on Friday. Because what it seemed like on Fridays was obviously a lot of the reps that we hire, they're already going and working their weekend events. So my team was just like sitting around, not getting a lot done the second half of Friday. And you could kind of tell it was weighing on everybody because nobody wants to feel unproductive. And so we put summer Fridays in place and we're like, we're going to do this summer. That way everybody can enjoy the good weather. You guys will maximize like getting to talk to reps when they're actually, you know, available more, and it'll be great. And what we saw was a huge increase in productivity. And my team was like at noon on a Friday, like, I'm getting the head out of town, like versus waiting till six or whatever. And so we decided to just keep it in place year round. So we've had it for a few years now. And even though it's not necessarily like a tool, I think it is because it allows people to kind of pre-plan and avoid burnout a little bit better because they're kind of scheduling more of their motivating time and their recouping time.
Are these roles like, this could be someone's first recruiting gig, or are you guys looking for someone with like some experience?
No, so our recruiters honestly prefer to hire people who have never recruited before. I'm sure you get it, right? Having been in recruiting, sometimes when you hire somebody who's done recruiting before, sometimes there's bad habits you have to break.
Baggage.
Yes, so much baggage, especially if they've been in low volume recruiting or they've been in more of like a longer recruiting cycle recruiting. Getting them to understand like the difference it's sometimes harder versus like just throwing somebody in, obviously not like literally, but somebody who doesn't have all that baggage. So our recruiters don't typically have to have recruiting experience. Our talent operations partners, we usually prefer that they have a little bit, but for us, it's more people management because it goes back to like, I can teach somebody how to recruit. We can teach them those basics, but the ability to manage people, to talk somebody into like going and maybe saying something a little differently to a store manager so they can still get in for their demo, like some of that finessing, it's a different level of skill set for sure.
So these, you said talent ops manager?
Yeah, they're talent ops partners.
Partner. They are more like, they face inward and outward, essentially.
Correct.
Like they're with the client and with you guys.
Yeah. And our clients are like our client service teams that are actually like servicing the clients. So our clients are our client service team. But yeah, they definitely serve like as the liaison between the two. And they all work hand in hand with a recruiter that's helping hire at that volume. So sometimes those talent ops partners are recruiting too. But sometimes they might have an event going on that day and they're doing nothing but managing those reps and handling while they have a recruiter behind the scenes working on their next project or like filling roles for whatever they have a day or two later.
I don't always ask this, but I like to challenge people as honest as you're willing to be. But like, what are, like you said, we are all not perfect. And it sounds like your team is crushing it. But like, what are some things that either you're banging your head against the wall on, or you're like, this isn't working, and like we want to make moves towards this over the next months or year or whatever it may be. Like, how are you guys improving and how are you finding those opportunities to improve? I think that's like an important piece too.
So I think right now the biggest struggle that we're having, and this is just me again like being transparent, is with quality. And because often, you know, we're stuck between we need quantity very quickly, but we also still want to give good quality hires. But there's a weird shift happening in the workforce right now. And even with these people that we have used for 3-4 years, maybe we're seeing a difference in behavior and just their expectation or their work ethic. And so I think for us right now, just really, I would say, working on our quality hiring and making sure that we're really doing our due diligence, even though we know we need to move quickly. I would say that's kind of something that we're putting a little bit more focus on right now, because it feels like a really weird hiring landscape at the moment.
How does that rear its ugly head for you guys? Like, is it like they don't show up for their first day of work? The work is bad. They don't accept positions, or like, how do you spot that?
It could be anything. I mean, I could tell you some of the things I've dealt with over the years, from like no shows. Like that's the most basic one. Just like a no call, no show, to having to call the police on site, to stores reaching out because they saw behavior on their CCTV footage. Like it's anything and everything in between. Honestly, sometimes we've had reps who cause a scene on site. Honestly, depends on the type of event, depends on the time of year. I feel like when it gets really warm out, we see even more of the behavior come out that's a little different, but it just varies.
No, that's wild.
It's also the brands. I will say the brands have something to do with it too. Like there are brands that reps in this space, they want to have on their resume. So there are certain brands where if people know that's what we're staffing for, we'll get 3 times the applications because they just want to be there. They want to be a part of it. especially if it's like a music event or it's at Ape Fest. I had reps that were trying to sneak away to go upstairs to the top level because Snoop Dogg was up there. They want to get in so that they can, you know, be a part of it. I think that's
experience.
Most,
yeah, yes. Yeah.
So that's most often, I think, where we see some of that. But some of it you really can't plan for. You have no idea that the guy who's worked 10 events for you, all high profile, is going to just suddenly sneak away at his 11th event. Like, you have no way of planning that.
Are you comfortable sharing your ATS?
Yeah. So we used to be on Taleo, but we've been making a shift over to Oracle. That's what we're on right now. And it's not like nobody knows my opinion on the transition, so we'll just leave it there. But we, as far as like scheduling and staffing, my team specifically and only at Acosta Group uses Booked Out.
For scheduling the...
Mm-hmm. Scheduling our reps.
Like their actual work.
Yep.
So you guys go pretty far.
Yeah, and it's an app. Like, they can download it on their phone, so it's bring your own device. You don't have to get reps, you know, a device or anything. Some of the other teams in the company, the systems they use require us to send them devices, which is obviously not a quick turnaround, right? So if I hire somebody today, I can have them in field today because they just need to download this app on their phone. So we use Booked Out for our scheduling and deployment.
Nice. So you guys go all the way from source to literally going to work.
Yeah, it's full circle. Like, we're going to source them. We're going to onboard them. We're going to manage them. I'm going to payroll them. I have client service teams that will never speak to the rep.
Wow. I'm over here thinking it's like if I was your client, like Acosta's client, I'm thinking you're going to get me a qualified list of 20. If I need 10, like I need 10 people at this event, you're going to get me 20 to do my little quick interview to make sure they're good. Like, you're doing all that.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, they're ready to go the day you need them. They're there already.
Correct. Sometimes we do like second interviews, but the majority of the time they're putting the trust in us, which is why it goes back to like your higher quality. You can have one bad event and that could really like damage your ability or your reputation to make people think that you can hire well. So
yeah, that's actually like high stakes, like very high stakes, I feel like, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I'm learning a lot. These are like, I love learning about companies that are like hidden, you know, like this is, I've probably interacted with something Acosta Group like millions of times and never knew it, which I think is really cool. But yeah.
The guy at Best Buy that like sold you your last TV probably was an Acosta Group employee.
I'm wondering if the guy that was selling me my washer, but like washer and dryer, he seemed very knowledgeable.
Samsung?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, they do. We do the appliance reps like full time, 100%.
Well, cool. I'm going to transition this because we could probably go deeper and deeper to the hot seat where I ask 5 questions. I try to read them fast. I'm not always the greatest at that. And then you try to answer quick as you can. So are you ready for your 5?
Let's go.
One person that changed your life in talent acquisition.
Tie between Chris Frederick and Brian Howard.
And why are they the ones?
So Chris Frederick was the guy that was the only one willing to put his job on the line to help me pilot my team. He was the guy that like stamped it and was like, I'll push the red button. Sure. So him for sure. And then Brian Howard, he helped me organize a lot and really hone in what I needed to get my team to the next level. So I'd say between the two of them, I learned 80% of what I know.
Most challenging role you've ever had to recruit for?
We did once get asked if we could hire somebody to go put construction paper on a window because there had been a crime committed in like the vendor spot next to our clients, and they didn't want their brand in the background when the news cameras showed up to start filming. So that was by
like
far
for that one.
Yeah,
job.
Like, yeah, they when the news cameras were there and they were like reporting live, they did not want their brand visible in the background. So they asked us, and it was the middle of nowhere. It was not a get it done by tomorrow. It was like, we need somebody there now because the news cameras were showing up any minute. We had to find somebody who could literally go tape construction paper over our client's brand so that they were not in the background. I think that was probably one of the hardest because you had to just get over the initial ask, but then it was middle of nowhere, literally middle of nowhere.
Success?
Yes.
Nice. Yeah. Cool. Where do you go to stay updated on the latest trends and changes in the TA landscape?
So I like to stay in touch with people more than just reading stuff online. I definitely stay in touch with Brian Fox from Trusted Herd. I think he probably has he has one of the best pulses as far as like gig shift staffing and the experiential industry. And then really, I just try to stay connected. I mean, my LinkedIn feed has a lot of great information. I'm connected with so many talent acquisition people that I feel like I'm getting so many sides of the spectrum anyways, from long-term hiring to, you know, high volume. So I would say probably LinkedIn if I had to pick one.
And then what's your go-to interview question if you'd only pick one?
I really like to ask people what they would tell me if I called them and let them know that I went in a different direction other than them. And I don't do that with like gig hiring, but when there's somebody on my team, biggest reason being like the environment on your team is important. And every new person that you bring in is you're taking a risk, right? They're either going to add to that culture on your team or they're just going to drain the life out of it. And somebody's reaction when they find out that you might've gone in a different direction, I think that says everything about them. I've had some people who lost it on me and I was like, perfect. You did not get the job. This is why. But then I've had other people who took it as a chance to like flip the script and give me a 30-second elevator pitch on just one more chance as to like why they were the best candidate. And I think that just also shows like your ability to persevere, which when you're doing high volume, you get told no a lot. So it's important.
Last one. What's a common talent acquisition activity that needs to die?
The cover letter.
This one's so popular.
Everybody says that, I'm sure, but like, let's be real. We all have Copilot. We all have ChatGPT. Like, is anybody even writing their cover letter anymore anyway?
Right. You're right.
It just needs to go. And no one's reading them. No one has time.
That is facts. To whom it may concern.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Brittany, this has been awesome. I've truly enjoyed learning about your world as you have gracefully managed chaos with your team. I think it's super impressive. And so I think the world will listen to this and want to keep up with you. So floor is yours to tell people how to stay connected with you, how to learn from you if they're wanting to.
Yeah. I mean, I think the best place if you're looking to connect professionally is on LinkedIn. Literally just linkedin.com/Brittany Etheridge. Keep it real simple for you. So I love to connect with people. I like hearing what other people are doing, what they've got going on. And I'm not afraid to hear a new idea. When Trusted Herd, just perfect example, when that one came out, it was weird. Nobody was really looking at it. And we were one of the first companies to sit down and say, like, this is going to be great. And it has become one of our best sourcing tools. So I love connecting on there. It's probably the best place.
And if you want to connect with me, I'm always on LinkedIn as well. But more importantly, if you love this podcast as much as I did, make sure to like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is, whatever the button is that you need to click on your platform. Bonus points for Spotify. Make sure to stay in tune with what we're doing at Higher Quality because we have more episodes coming week after week. And so appreciate all of you for listening. Brittany, again, I appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks for having me.